There's a scene in the 2005 film adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice where four characters discuss the phrase, an accomplished young woman. At one point in this conversation, a long list of the necessary accomplishments in order to warrant this title is rattled off. She needs to be able to dance well, social dancing skills. She needs to have singing abilities. She needs to be able to play the pianoforte. She needs to be able to draw and to paint and to have other craft ability in designing cushions and mending purses. There needs to be something in her air and manner of walking. She needs to have a knowledge of modern languages and to improve her mind by extensive reading. I love how the director, Joe Wright, handles this scene because the camera then cuts to Lizzie Bennett, the main character, and she says, I never saw such a woman. And then Darcy has some snarky comment, and Lizzie replies, she'd certainly be a fearsome thing to behold. A fearsome thing to behold. It's an apt phrase for how many readers of Proverbs look at chapter 31. What is often titled the wife of noble character or the woman of valor, or what we often call the Proverbs 31 woman. She is a fearsome thing to behold. We've been listening to the Proverbs together all summer in our readings, in our sermons, and I hope in your own time as well that you've been able to give some time to reading or meditating on some of the Proverbs. And as we've tried to make clear, Proverbs is made up of a few different segments. And here we are at the very end. Chapter 30, we have these sayings from Agur, and then chapter 31 is titled The Sayings of King Lemuel, but if you read it, it's actually the sayings that his mother taught him. So these are the sayings of King Lemuel's mother here at the end. But then in the middle, there is this large chunk, which is what we usually think of when we think of Proverbs. These little sayings, little pictures painted with words, little vignettes, maybe just a sentence or two, that convey to us a little scene. Here's how the fool lives. Here's how the wise live. Here are people to avoid, to be warned of. Here are people to emulate, to become like. Here are those who fall victim to the adulterous woman, the strange woman, femme fatale, as we've been calling her. And here are those who hear and heed the voice of Lady Wisdom. Let me give you a couple examples. From chapter 11, those who trust in their riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. Or chapter 12, fools show their annoyance at once, but the prudent overlook an insult. We read these Proverbs, and I think we cannot help but compare ourselves to them. We hear those who trust in their riches will fall, and we hold our lives up to that and say, do I trust in my riches? How much do I trust in my money-making ability? Or we hear, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. We hold our lives up to that and say, does my life seem like a green and growing thing, nourished and nourishing? Or we hear, fools show their annoyance at once. We hold ourselves up to that and say, do I show my annoyance at once? Maybe I give it a few minutes. And then we hear, but the prudent will overlook an insult. We hold ourselves up to that and ask ourselves, when is the last time I actually overlooked an insult and didn't just spiral inwardly through what was said and who was actually wrong and how they should apologize to me and I don't need to apologize to them? When was the last time you actually overlooked an insult? Of course we compare ourselves to the Proverbs, and that seems to be exactly what the Proverbs are encouraging. But then in chapter 31, the very end of this book, the culmination, we could say, the finale, and we are taken beyond comparison into praise. we are drawn into a praise song, a poem of praise to a woman, an unnamed woman. But scholars make a big deal of saying that the Hebrew nouns make it clear this is a real person. It's not a fictional character, not a personification of wisdom. We might say she is, in fact, an incarnation of all of the wisdom in Proverbs up to this point. Here it is, in the flesh, embodied in a real life person. And we, the readers, we're invited to praise her. Because praising wisdom gets inside of us. It gets in our bones. It changes us. At the beginning of the summer, I preached on Lady Wisdom as this cosmic figure in the book of Proverbs, a personification of a life well lived in the fear of the Lord. And then I mentioned how this cosmic figure becomes more concrete in the parental voice that we hear in Proverbs, the father or the mother voice giving instruction to their child. We might say that this wisdom journey becomes even more concrete in Proverbs 31, in this real woman of valor who embodies wisdom. And y'all, in the Hebrew scriptures, organized a little differently, what book do you think immediately follows Proverbs? So you read Proverbs 31, you turn the page, and what are you looking at? Any guesses? Nope. Nope. Who's my girl? Ruth! Ruth immediately follows the book of Proverbs in the Hebrew scriptures. Proverbs 31, the woman is not named. We don't know her story, but Ruth comes along as the next iteration, so to speak, of wisdom lived out, wisdom in the flesh. We get her name and her story and her particulars. And Ruth, as we well know, is in the messianic bloodline, so she points us to Jesus, the full and complete incarnation of wisdom lived out in a human life on earth. My point is that Proverbs 31 is a new incarnation in the unfolding story of wisdom. So let's look at this poem that takes us beyond comparison and into praise. I'm going to spend about the next 5 minutes doing just that, praising her. So this poem is an acrostic. You might not have known that unless you read Hebrew. But each verse starts with a consecutive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So from A to Z, as it were. This is a well-crafted poem to sing this woman's praises in fullness. It's a poem of heroic proportions, this form usually reserved for war heroes. From a literary perspective, it is a full and complete praise poem. It covers all the bases, tells the whole story of how awesome this woman is. And there's nothing like it in the rest of the scriptures. Nothing that dedicates this kind of craft, this length of space to praise one individual. Right at the very beginning, she is called, at verse 10, she is called a wife of noble character. It's a rare phrase in the Old Testament. If you were in my Ruth class, you know that this phrase is applied to Ruth. There it is. Ruth and Boaz. He's not called a woman of noble character, but a man of noble character. This is how high praise in the Jewish imagination. And the praise for her goes on and on and on. She's praised for her goodness towards the one she is most bound to, her husband. She's praised for her artistry, for her knowledge of her materials in her artistry. She's praised for her work ethic, her industry, her entrepreneurial decisions and smarts. The sacrificial way she loves those around her, she loves those in her care. She's praised for her generosity, her sensitivity to those in need. She looks to the future, but not in fear. She uses her body in beautiful ways. We hear and see so much in our day about women's bodies and how they use them and how others use them. But here, the poet repeatedly names her arms, her hands. Let me just show you. She works with eager hands, verse 13. Her arms are strong for her tasks, verse 17. In her hand, she holds the distaff. She grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor, extends her hands to the needy. Honor her for all that her hands have done. She employs her body for good work, for creativity and generosity. She's praised for dressing well. Yep, check it out. Verse 22. But even better than that, verse 25, she is clothed with strength and dignity. She's praised as a teacher, an instructor, praised for how she uses words. She's praised for not being lazy. She fears the Lord. And that is worthy of praise. Not only does the poem praise her, it tells us about who else praises her. Her husband praises her. Her children praise her. The whole city, in fact, by the end, is praising this woman. And from our moment in history, we know that countless cultures and generations have continued praising this woman because of her inclusion in the scriptures. This is just a summary of the praise poem. So let me ask you, why, if she's so awesome, and this poem in praise of her is this brilliant, why do we read it and feel deflated, discouraged, jealous, angry, self-pitying? Tempted to mock this chapter, or to become proud and self-righteous? A simple answer to that question would be sin. That's why we respond this way. But I think there's something else to explore here as I've spent time with it over the summer. We are beckoned here at the end of Proverbs, not so much to hold our lives up to her, but to praise her. We are taken beyond comparisons into praise of another person. Why is this where Proverbs takes us? I want to say to you, because praising wisdom is transformative. Praise gets in our bones and changes us. So I want to name three ways that praising wisdom in particular does this. Number one, praising wisdom frees us from self-focus, frees us from self-obsession. Just by reading it, we are kind of forced to praise her when we join our voice in reading these words, to name how valiant, how praiseworthy she is. But by the final verse, I don't know if you noticed it in the reading, we are actually commanded to honor her and praise her. This is the final verse in the NIV. Honor her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. I'm convinced that casting our eyes, our attention, our imaginations towards embodied wisdom being lived out can free us from self-obsession, from going round and round internally with regard to mostly ourselves. Praising another person can break us out of that. Praising true wisdom, where we find it, in all its beautiful particulars, draws you out of yourself. You have to be humble enough to notice it in another person. You have to be attentive enough to the people around you to really name it and praise it. So Proverbs 31 shows us that being cultivated or shepherded or discipled in the way of wisdom must include praise of wise living. Praising wisdom doesn't only free us, it trains us in recognizing wisdom, trains our senses, our imaginations to sniff out wisdom, we might say, even if in surprising places. It's a practice of saying, this is good. This is true. This is beautiful. Do you remember what Jesus said about the woman who unashamedly anointed him with costly perfume when everybody else in the room was correcting her, rebuking her, shaming her, telling her to stop, telling her she shouldn't be there, telling her to be quiet, telling her to stop? And yet Jesus says, she has done a beautiful thing. When is the last time you genuinely praised wisdom wherever you found it? Let me distill that a little. I don't just mean when is the last time you liked something on social media or put a little heart on it or even typed, love it. That's not what I'm talking about. When is the last time you actually gave voice to, she has done a beautiful thing? She opens her hands in generosity to those in need. He does good and not harm to his children. He is fearless when he looks to the future because he trusts in God. She is such a good listener. She forgave me thoroughly when I apologized. When we praise wisdom, wherever we find it, it gets in our bones. It's transformative. It frees us and it trains us to recognize wisdom more and more. It cultivates a palate for wisdom. If you've been a Christian a long while, you're probably used to considering and hopefully really engaging in praise to God. And I am by no means diminishing that. We are creatures designed to praise. Most of all, to praise our Creator and our Redeemer. He is worthy. He is our wisdom. Praise Him. But apparently, according to Proverbs 31, we are also meant to praise other people. I'm not talking about flattery. I'm not talking about manipulation. I'm not talking about 10 ways to compliment your employees to make them more effective workers. I'm not talking about any kind of power play, but genuine praise. Because that will get in your bones. That will free you, and it will train you to have eyes to see wisdom. And lastly, praising wisdom in others can inspire us to become wiser. I mean that word inspire literally. It can breathe into us a desire to become wiser. As we breathe out praise of another person, inspiration to become wise can be breathed back into us. Having eyes to see the goodness and beauty of wisdom goes to work in us, goes to work on our desires, and longings can change. Longings can change. And not just longings, but actions. Of course, we act upon what we desire. Paul writes in his letter to the church in Philippi, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, listen to this. If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. People often stop there, but he goes right on to say, he's not just saying think about them, he says put it into practice. That's exactly what praising wise people can do. It can inspire us to put such wisdom into practice. A quick and final word about being inspired by what we praise. I asked you a minute ago when the last time was that you offered genuine praise when you saw wisdom at work in another person. So I want to ask you now, when was the last time you praised something or someone that wasn't wise, that was not lovely, that wasn't admirable, wasn't pure, wasn't true, wasn't noble? By praising, I mean giving your attention to, giving your yes to. How much time do you spend praising deceptive and fleeting things? By that, I mean charm, which is deceptive, and physical beauty, which is fleeting. How much time do you spend praising these things? Because praise gets in your bones. Praise will transform you or deform you. Proverbs closes with this praise poem from King Lemuel's mother. And we are beckoned into praise in such a way as to free us, to train us, and to inspire us. So I want to leave you with the final verse of this poem. For wherever you find wisdom, honor her for what her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Amen. May it be so.